Call. Please be seated.
Okay, good evening. If you want to keep your Bibles open to Psalm 20, we're going to be diving into that psalm tonight and breaking it down and looking at what this psalm is all about and where did it come from. And there's a lot to it, and it's really cool when I was studying through it, learning about where this psalm actually originated, what they used it for during the time of the Israelite, during the Jewish religion, why they would have used it, and then we'll see how they used it then and how we can use it today. Thank you, Rick, so much for reading that. I will be actually looking at it from the ESV Bible tonight and looking at it and helping us understand what this, again, psalm is all about. I tried to give my microphone to Joshua tonight, but he said preaching to 8,000 people today was enough for him, and so you are stuck with me tonight. And I'm really excited. I like to go through psalms and break them down. They're really cool because it is poetry, and you can see a lot of different symmetry throughout. And it helps us to be able to understand. And what's going to be key as we go through this psalm is looking at repeated phrases, but also looking at pronouns, because you're going to see a wide variety of pronouns being used here in different person. You'll see second person, third person, first person. And you may be asking yourself, why is all of this happening in this one psalm? Well, Psalm 20 is great, and as Rick said, it is a psalm of David. Now, a lot of scholars will say that this particular psalm is considered a liturgy, okay? Now, if you're like me, what in the world is a liturgy, okay? I had to Google that, and it's like a service, a time of worship. And so this would have been a time where they came together to worship God and to make requests of God and almost have like a service together as a congregation of Israel. Now, this would have been, most scholars say, during or right before a time of battle. So all the Israelite people would come together and they would use Psalm 20 as a launching point for their service. Now, you can notice as you go throughout here, you'll need to notice some of these different pronouns being used. Notice verse 1, may the Lord answer you. Okay, we need to figure out who the you is. You is often realized as whoever the king is at that moment. So in this particular context, it would be David. So may the Lord answer the king in the day of trouble. May the Lord answer David in the day of trouble. May the name of the God of Jacob, protect the king. May he protect David. See, they're making requests of God in these first three verses to help save the king, be with him, protect him, as he may be going into this battle, or maybe he's just going through a time of trouble. May God protect the king. This is what the congregation of Israel would be praying, would be shouting out to God and asking for. Then he goes on to say, or the congregation would go on to say in prayer and praise, may he, the Lord, send you, the king, help from the sanctuary and give you, the king, support from Zion. Right? The temple was the dwelling place of God. That was where his glory filled the Holy of Holies, right? And the common understanding was that he could send forth help from that place. And so they're asking, God, please send forth help from your temple, from your dwelling place to our king. Please support him. And then verse 3, they end this first little section of, may he remember all your offerings and regard with favor your burnt sacrifices. So they end this first area talking about how they're praying to God that David, their king, has found favor in the sight of the Lord through all of his offerings, whether they be grain offerings or his burnt offerings. May you be in good standing with the Lord. May you be in a faithful standing with the Lord is what they're praying. And then you notice that word Selah. Now that word Selah means to pause and reflect, right? And so they want to step back and then all as a congregation of Israel realize we need to make sure we are pausing and reflecting. Scholars will also say that during this time of the liturgy, they may even open up the writings or the law and read from those, or read from the prophets, and read particular scriptures concerning battle or things along those lines during this time of pause and reflection, right? Now, notice in verse 4, we still have that same recipe happening. Notice they're still in this time of request, prayer to God. Notice it starts out with the word may, right? May he, who is the he, the Lord, grant you, the king, your heart's desire. Now, if we're understanding this being in the day of trouble, obviously we'd want a victory, right? For the Lord's people, for the Lord's army. And so they're praying that God will grant victory for the king, right? And the Israelite people, and that he fulfill all your plans. Then, verse 5, may we shout for joy over your salvation, and in the name of our God, set up our banners. Now they're already getting to this idea of we want to go ahead and shout victory. We want to put up our banners, right? Whenever you watch old movies, when one nation conquers another, what do they put in that conquered nation? Their flags, right? They start flying their own banners to represent that we have conquered this. And that's what they're saying is we want to be able to set up our banners. We want to show victory. And so they're praying to God that he will do this for them. And then they end verse 5, notice, may the Lord fulfill all your petitions. Notice how all of that is sandwiched right there, right? They start out with, may the Lord answer, and then at the end of verse 5, may the Lord fulfill all these petitions, all your petitions. David, king, right? We want God to grant all of these things. And now notice what's really cool about verse 6. What does it start out with? Now I. Okay? Now verse 6, it almost seems like this is the part of the service where the king will actually respond to all of those prayers. And notice what the king says. Now I know that the Lord saves his anointed. What did David already know was going to happen when he went into battle with the Lord? He knew God was going to take care of him, right? He knew that all of those requests were going to happen. He knew that he was going to be protected. He knew God was going to fight for him. He knew that he was going to have victory. And that's why we see the king responding to all of those requests being made by the congregation. I know the Lord saves his anointed. He will answer the king from his holy heaven with the saving might of his right hand. This is David having his assurance that God will take care of him. And you even think about when David went up against Goliath. We all know that story very well. What was the most important weapon David took with him into that battle? God, right? Some people may say the sling. Some people may say the extra smooth rocks that he found, but he took God with him. You see, the Israelite army struggled with that part. They were scared because they saw this giant, but David went into the battle knowing he had a God way bigger than Goliath. You see, and that's what this psalm is also referring to. May God do all of these wonderful things. May God grant you, the king, victory. And David says, I know he will, right? I wonder how many of us have that assurance when we go into our everyday battles of knowing maybe we're like the congregation where we are asking God and making petitions to God, God, may you do all of these things for us. May you grant us victory. But we don't have that same assurance that David has, where he says, I know God will take care of me. I would encourage us to really have that same assurance. to be able to go in each and every day and say, I know God is going to take care of me. We may lose a battle, but I won't win or lose the war, right? God will take care of me. God will win. And so let's have that assurance. Notice after verse 6, verses 7 and 8, most of the scholars will say that this is more of a statement of faith by the Israelite people. And notice, some trust in chariots and some in horses. But contrast, this is where we have this type of parallelism where we contrast the first line. So, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They, these ones that trust in chariots and horses, collapse and fall, but we rise and stand upright. See, the problem with these some is that they looked at chariots and horses as the way to have military advantage. And rightly so, right? Whenever you look at the Roman Empire, what were they known to have? Chariots and horses and all of these wonderful things. And they used that into being able to conquer people. And there was a lot of other kingdoms and empires that said, hey, we should get a bunch of those horses and chariots too, because they have great military might with all of this. We can have it too. And so they put their trust in it. But notice what the congregation of Israel and the king, because notice what they're using, what pronoun they're using now, but we. You see, now the king and the congregation are all involved in this. They didn't put their trust in horses and chariots, but they put their trust in the name of the Lord their God. Notice also what happens to those who trust in horses and chariots. They collapse and fall, but we rise and stand upright. You even think about the Egyptian army as they were trying to catch the Israelites as they were making their exodus out of Egypt and they were coming after them. What were they coming after them with? Horses and chariots. They were a very fearful army. And once they got to the Red Sea and tried to start going across the Red Sea, what happened? God took care of them, right? And that is this idea where we don't need to put our trust in the horses and chariots, but we need to put our trust in the name of the Lord our God, because ultimately their trust in those things will cause them to collapse and fall, but those who trust in the Lord will rise and be able to stand upright. Now, verse 9, O Lord, save the king. May he answer us when we call. So that ends this pre-battle service, this pre-battle time of worship liturgy where they're coming together and they're making these requests as the king is about to go into battle and they're asking for victory, right? But the very important part, what I want to talk about, is that idea of verses 7 and 8, right? Now, I don't know how many of us have horses and chariots at our house, but probably not a lot of us. But there are a lot of things in our life where we put our trust in rather than God, right? Where we put our trust in earthly things and we leave God aside. You think about things like, if I have a little bit more money, I'll be a little bit more secure in my life, right? Maybe we've thought that before, or maybe if I get this better job, I'll feel a little bit better, a little bit more secure, that I'll be able to provide for my family and do all of these different things. And I put my trust in that better job. What happens if I don't get that better job, though? Maybe that's happened to you. Boy, it sends you on a downward spiral. See, notice what happens to those who put their trust in the horses and chariots. They collapse and fall. Right? And when we start to put our trust in earthly things, what happens when those earthly things don't work out? It goes down. You even think about things like relationships, right? And we can put our trust in these relationships, in certain people. But if we're all honest with ourselves, we've all been hurt by people. And when we put our trust in people, our full trust in people, and all of a sudden they hurt us, what happens? We collapse and fall. And so we want to do what the Israelites were doing. We don't want to put our trust in all of the horses and chariots in our lives. We want to put our trust in God, because God won't leave us out to dry. God will always be there for us. And notice what happens to those who put their trust in the name of the Lord their God. They will rise and stand upright. My encouragement for us is to look at what we put our trust in and start making sure that what we do put our trust in is God, and making sure that he's number one, so that we can always make sure that we will rise and we will be able to stand upright in our lives. This is a wonderful psalm, and I would also encourage you during your days, maybe even at the beginning of your day, read through this psalm. But instead of using those different pronouns that they have, make it personal for you. May the Lord answer when I call in the day of my trouble. You see how we can do that. May the name of the Lord of God of Jacob protect me. May he send help from his sanctuary to help me and give support to me from Zion. May he remember all of my faithfulness, right? May he grant me my heart's desire and help fulfill all my plans. May we all shout for joy over our salvation, and in the name of our God, set up our victory banners. May the Lord fulfill all of my petitions. Now I know, and this is probably the most important part to the prayer that you may pray every single morning, now I know that the Lord will save his anointed. Right? We all want to be those people who are sure of our salvation. And we need to make sure we're putting our trust in the Lord our God. And that's just a wonderful psalm that I have come to love, and I hope that you will love it as well. Maybe you're here tonight and you find yourself again in need and struggling, and maybe you have put your trust in earthly things and you have found yourself let down by those earthly things. We would love to pray with you. We would love to encourage you. Or maybe you're here tonight and you are ready to put Christ on in baptism and have your sins washed away. We would love for tonight to be that night. We just ask that if you have any need, you come while we